Come on, man. We need the work. Let's go. Let's go.
Got two on the field. He's got Cruz. 35-30.
Oh, we got no video. No big deal.
Touchdown, Giants!
And welcome to Monday's edition of Big Blue Kickoff Live here on Giants.com. Alongside Paul Dottino, I'm Lance Medow with you for the next 60 minutes as we'll be recapping another heartbreaking loss for the Giants at MetLife Stadium on Sunday. They fall to the Panthers 38-35. Graham Gano, a game-winning 43-yard field goal as time expires. The sixth time that the Giants have lost this season by 4 points or less. The fifth time that it has come down to a last-second field goal. So we'll get into the ins and outs on the contest. We'll get to your phone calls at 201-939-4513. You can't weigh in on the phones. You can certainly interact with us on social media using hashtag GiantsChat. All right, Paul, let's start with... This is a game, to me, that there were a number of missed opportunities that really impacted momentum swings in this contest. And yes, the game got out of hand. There was a 28-point deficit. For the first time in franchise history, the Giants overcame a 28-point deficit. But if you look at some of the developments early in this contest, Odell Beckham dropping what likely would have been a touchdown on that first drive, DRC dropping what likely would have been a pick six, you know, that all of a sudden changes what was really a 7-7 game for the majority of the first half.
Yeah, I posted on my Twitter this morning that one could only imagine how the game might have been different if Odell Beckham had held on to that opening bomb by Eli when the game was, you know, still in its infancy, only four plays in. I can't even imagine how that would have affected the dynamic of his matchup with Norman, because Norman was fried, let's face it. He was beaten by like three steps.
Yeah.
How would that have changed that whole dynamic? And then, of course, how would that have changed the dynamic of the teams? I will say this, like I wrote on my FAN blog, WFAN blog today, truly a mixed bag, but one that had the hole in the bottom, because ultimately the Giants lost. You can spin this any way you like. There were clearly several positive things about the game and clearly several negative things about the game. Those are the facts. I mean, and we could sit here and dissect them for you if we like. I choose to look at it and say, okay, where do they go as a football team now? We know what the situation is. Philadelphia lost yesterday. Washington won. The Giants now need to beat the Vikings and the Eagles and need the Redskins to lose to the Eagles and the Cowboys.
Right.
To win the division and to make the playoffs. That's the bottom line. That's where they stand. That's reality. I will add one other thing here before we get into any calls or any other comments. I think the 28-point comeback, which, by the way, yes, historical proportions for the Giants to come back and tie the game. First time they'd ever done that from a 28-point deficit. Go back to 1992 in September. They played the Cowboys. They were down 34-0 third quarter. They scored 28 consecutive points. Cut it to 34-28. And then, of course, the Cowboys had a key third down conversion in the final minutes. And that's how they sealed the game. So I had seen a 28-point Giants comeback before. Golly, 1992. Am I really that old?
Yes.
Yes, thank you.
I'm here to remind you about that.
So yes.
Not a problem.
So I've seen the Giants do this and make, you know, they don't happen often, but I've seen it happen. And all I'm going to say is what I talked about with the players on the field yesterday and then in the coaches' club and what I said on the postgame on Channel 9, and I'm going to say it again. For everything that you want to say about this, and many Giants fans who've been around for 20, 30, 40, 50 years, they've seen teams not perform well. They've seen teams not finish at 500. They've seen teams finish in last place. They've seen a lot of bad teams in certain eras of Giants football. This team, for the results that they put on the field, has shown fight,
yeah,
has shown gumption, has played hard for its coach. They may not be very talented. They may make a lot of bad mistakes. They may shoot themselves in the foot and find every which way to break your heart and lose games. All that stuff may be true, but they have not quit on Coach Tom Coughlin. I say that as me, as an observer who's been around this game for 33 years. I do not speak for anyone else in this building, for anyone else upstairs in the organization. I speak for me. I don't see quit in this team. I see a team that tries and tries and tries and hasn't gotten it done. But they have played for this coach. They should be proud of that. The coaching staff has worked as hard as any coaching staff I've ever seen. They should be proud of that. I leave you with those comments as we begin to dissect the rest of what we're going to do.
Well, I would agree with you, Paul. I mean, I think that clearly based on how these games have come down to the wire and there's only really the one blowout with the Philadelphia Eagles, that it's a sign that this team does keep on fighting. However, closing out games continues to be, unfortunately, a storyline that has not worked in their favor. And, you know, this was yet another contest where your offense fights its way out of a hole. Still a minute 46 on the clock. You need your defense to make a stop. And what I mean by that is prevent them from even getting into field goal range. And a lot of times this season, they haven't been able to get that key third down stop or that key stop on second down just to put the offense on the opposing side in a precarious situation.
You know, for anybody who didn't appreciate and didn't fully relish the days when Tuck and OC and Strahan,
Antonio Pierce,
and all those guys were here, boy, I hope you appreciate those guys a whole lot more
now.
Puts
things in perspective.
I mean, do you know there were actually people who questioned me when with 3 and 4 years to go in Michael Strahan's career and I predicted he'd go to the Hall of Fame? There were people who actually said to me, what, are you kidding me? Really? And I couldn't understand it. Obviously, they just didn't have clear vision because the guy was a Hall of Famer through and through. And, of course, that's where he wound up. So often we don't appreciate the great players outside of perhaps Lawrence Taylor, you know, when they're here and how great it is that they really are. Because, my goodness, when you're winning 10 games a year, when you're going to the playoffs almost every year, when you're in contention for the Super Bowl a couple, 2, 3, 4 years in a row, man, that is so sweet if you're a fan. And it's pretty fun as a media person to cover, too. So it's these times, these difficult issues, and times like you have now, that truly makes some people reflect and appreciate how great it was when the team was kicking butt. It'll happen again at some point. The tide always comes and goes.
Yeah.
You know, it'll happen again. And when it does, I hope everybody appreciates it.
Well, one thing that was evident that gave us a taste of what we've seen in the past, Paul, was the Giants' running game yesterday. And this was by far their best rushing performance of the season, their best rushing performance going back to really the Texans game last year in the 2014 season. This is one stat that I came across, Paul, that to me really put things in perspective yesterday. They didn't have one negative run. I can't remember the last time, based on my charts, that they had a game where they didn't have one negative run. They certainly didn't have that take place in 2014.
No.
Because I went through all the games. 2013, no. I haven't yet looked at. But in the last two seasons, they haven't had one game where there were no negative runs. That was apparent yesterday. On top of the fact that they had 6 yards per carry, 27 carries for 161 yards.
Rashad Jennings ran extremely hard.
Yeah.
He did against Miami as well. We've talked about this, that it's not even the total yardage that you have. It's when the yards come, and do they move the chains? Do they give you enough respect on the other side of the ball so that they need to worry about it, so that you can do certain things with your offense? They've shown that now. It's too little too late, of course. I mean, if they had done this the first month of the season, maybe a lot would be different right now.
Extra first down here or there, yeah.
I mean, maybe a few of those losses, they're running a four-minute offense and they're killing the clock.
Correct.
So you make a great point. I mean, it's a damn shame that it didn't happen earlier.
Eli Manning, back-to-back games with 4 touchdown passes. The first time he's done that in his career in the same season. He's done it the last game of one regular season, the first game of the next season. But this is the first time in the same season.
I am so glad you brought Eli Manning up. I'm sorry, folks. I'm getting on my soapbox again. How tall is the soapbox going to be?
Well, it's going to be taller than me regardless.
Folks, for the Eli Manning critics out there who continue to want to hammer him, let me make something very clear. The pressure that was on him on the interception, it was right there. I think, if I'm not mistaken, there may have actually even been a deflection of his hand when he released the ball.
His hand definitely got hit, Paul.
Okay?
I've watched that replay, yeah.
So let's make that very clear. That is not on Eli. And in terms of his decision-making process, Hakeem Nicks had about 4 inches, or maybe 3, on the defensive back in one-on-one coverage in the left corner of the end zone. He made the right decision. He was looking for the right guy. And the pressure happened to get there just as he was releasing the ball. Because I'm going to tell you something. If the ball gets there without Nick's tripping and falling, it's a touchdown.
Or it's at least an attempt on a positive play.
Yeah. Nick's had position.
Charles Tillman was behind
him. Tillman was behind him. This had touchdown written all over it. All over it. And Nick's fell down while the ball was in flight. Even though Eli was impeded in throwing the pass, he still got
still
it out there.
Still managed to get it out there, yeah.
Nick's doesn't trip. That's a touchdown, and we're all talking about what a great play that Eli Manning just made, despite the pressure. So let me just tell you, anybody out there who wants to criticize Eli Manning, don't bother calling because I'm not going to let you do it.
Well, there were two factors on that play. The fact that his hand gets hit, so that clearly impacts where he was going with the football, and then Nick slips. So you have to at least look at both of those factors as to why it resulted in an interception. But I agree with you, Paul.
He was great yesterday. And
he was phenomenal. I mean, the numbers showcase that. I don't really think you could fault him. He's a big reason why they came back in this contest. And his numbers on the season, 32 touchdowns, 11 interceptions. 32 is a career high. So that's been a big storyline the whole season. The problem is it hasn't gotten nearly enough attention because, unfortunately, the results haven't shown that up in the standings. But getting back to that play.
What, another three or four drops yesterday, too, including the opening bomb to Beckham.
Yeah. And Will Tye had
a few drops. What do his numbers look like if those passes are caught?
Absolutely. Well, you go back to even the Dolphins game, Paul. His four incompletions, we talked about this on last week's show. Two of them were deflections.
Yeah.
And then you drop passes. So, I mean, the guy didn't make a bad decision at all.
No,
in
not at all.
The Dolphins' performance.
Anyway.
And yesterday, no, I would agree
with you.
I just
wanted to nip that at the bud.
No, I think it's a fair point because I don't know if enough people take into consideration. It's not just Nick slipping. It's the hand getting hit.
Sure.
Both of those, that plays right into the hands of Charles Tillman. And Eli, after the game, on the Giants radio network, when he was talking to Bob Papa, he mentioned that he was trying to get rid of the football. But I even say to myself, if the hand doesn't get hit, he sees Akeem Nicks down the field, like you mentioned, one-on-one coverage. Manning's the type of quarterback, he has trusted his wide receivers, go up, jump, get the football. So it would have been a positive play regardless.
Again, with Nicks' wingspan, and we've seen him go up and get balls like that. We know the hands that he's got. We know the wingspan that he's got. He's got, I don't care what the height is on Tillman and Nicks in terms of what their real height is, because of Nicks' wingspan, he's got a three-inch favorable matchup. He's going to because he can go get it. Anyway.
Absolutely. Real quickly, before we get to the phone calls, 201-939-4513, we focused on the Giants' offense. In terms of the Giants' defense, a lot of talk, obviously, on that last drive, Paul. But even before that, you know, Cam, five touchdowns, a number of big plays through the air. And the struggles, Paul, and we've seen this in previous seasons, to slow down a mobile quarterback, a quarterback that can get out of the pocket but also run up the middle and every other angle, just like we saw with Russell Wilson a few seasons ago.
You know, the shame of it is when they do get some heat on these particular kind of quarterbacks, and then all of a sudden the guy breaks containment and bang, it's a big play. The 47-yard scramble comes to mind at the beginning of the game. Look, eight carries for 100 yards.
It's a good average.
You know, is unbelievable for Cam Newton. The 47-yard scramble, they get some heat on him. Things part. Landon Collins, the safety, either he made a bad read or physically just took a bad angle. I'm not sure if it was a mental or a physical mistake, but he's got to be the one who steps up and seals that hole at the next level. He didn't do it. And so that was one of the primary reasons why that became a 47-yard scramble up the middle. You know, a couple of missed tackles on some of those other runs as well, which we've talked about, have haunted the team now for the last month or so. The tackling hasn't been as good as it needs to be. Of course, he's a tough guy to tackle. He's big, he's strong. He does break a lot. But the missed tackle's certainly an issue. A couple other times I saw guys not take the right angle either. I mean, yeah, it's been a problem. It has been a problem. But again, coming into the game, Newton had over 450 yards rushing on the season. It's not like he doesn't
run. No, it was no mystery. Yeah.
You know, he does that. I think what I told people during the pregame show was, I don't think the Panthers are really going to be able to run the ball against the Giants outside of Newton. I would put a spy on him just to say, hey, you know what? Just shadow him because he's their biggest running threat. They had 70-something yards on 21 carries. outside of Cam Newton.
Well, Mike Tolbert and Fozzie Whitaker, they only have 7 carries combined for 12 yards. And then Cameron Artis Payne, who had the costly fumble on the handoff, 14 carries for 59 yards. So, for the most part, outside of Cam,
they did everything they
needed
to do.
Giants contained the group that was supposed to replace Jonathan Stewart. The problem is the quarterback made up for his loss.
And that's it. And that's why Cam Newton is an MVP candidate also.
And he did show that through the air as well as with his legs. Fans, don't forget Big Blue Kickoff Live brought to you by DraftKings, the daily fantasy sports destination. DraftKings, you can play as often as you want with no season-long commitment. Go to DraftKings.com, enter promo code CONTACT to play for free. Today, DraftKings Fantasy Sports, free to play. All right, let's open up the phone lines here at 201-939-4513. We want to hear from as many of you as possible throughout the duration of the program. Hashtag Giants Chat. I know a number of you are weighing in already. We'll get to some of your tweets. Scott gets us started. He's in D.C. Scott, what's happening?
Gentlemen, how you doing today?
Hi. Doing well, Scott.
I did call last week and said the key to the game was to contain Newton's running. Ayers and JPP obviously didn't do that. I want to make two comments. First one deals with ODB. This is football 101, Paul. The man lost control. He was out of control on the football field and displayed despicable conduct and sportsmanship. He created a danger to his own health. He created a danger to the health of other players on the field, both on the Giants from retaliation and on the opposing team from his conduct drawing the personal fouls. I believe he's going to be suspended by the league. I hope they can pull out the last two games without him, but do not be surprised if the commissioner sits him down for the rest of the season. I know the coach addressed this issue at the press conference, but he did the wrong thing by not benching him, by not doing something to get him under control. Now, Paul, the issue isn't whether the team quit on the coach or not. The issue is whether he's able, you know, whether he's able to get his message across to the team, whether they listen to him, whether his voice is heard.
And whether there's enough talent on the roster. Don't forget that.
Don't go there. Don't get me started. Three of their first four draft picks next year better be defensive players. The question is whether the coach is a voice. Hey, look, I've mentioned this before. Mike Holmgren got his Eagles to the championship game, what, 4 straight years?
Andy Reid.
If you can't get them over the top, how long do you wait?
Yeah. I understand your question. I understand your logic. I'm not saying that you're out of bounds, because there are a lot of factors that have to be weighed when you consider a situation like that. And it's not as easy or as clear cut as just pulling the trigger or pushing the button.
And
for that reason,
next year, it's not easy the year after that.
It's never an easy decision unless a team quits. That's when it's easy, okay? That's when it's a very easy decision. The Giants...
That's not the coach's problem. The team doesn't quit on him.
They clearly don't.
Regardless of what the coaches say, you've still got guys catching a punt at the end of the game at the 2-yard line. Harris.
Yeah.
You still have guys committing stupid personal fouls. Hal Beckham didn't break his hand on that cornerback's helmet, I don't know.
Yeah, well, I think both guys probably could have had broken fingers the way they kept grabbing face masks all afternoon.
Yeah, it was back and forth.
I appreciate the call. Thank you. I understand your frustration. As we talked earlier, right before we were starting the show, the league is handling whatever situation they're going to handle regarding Norman and Beckham. And that's really all there is to it. And until something comes out about that, there's really nothing else to say.
Yeah, everything else is speculation at this point. I mean, obviously everybody saw what transpired in the game, but it is in the league's hands at this point. And everything else, whether it be media reports or anything else not connected to the team, is strictly speculation. Let's hear from Drew in Virginia. Drew, what's happening?
Hey, Paul. Hey, Lance. How
hey,
you guys
doing well,
today?
Drew. What do you got for us?
Hey, actually, man, the caller just before me, man, pretty much took my thunder. But, I, you know, regardless of whatever, you know, we say in terms of speculation. I will tell you right now, tomorrow we'll be talking about Odell's suspension. I didn't see the game. You know, we didn't get the game here. We got the Redskins games, but I did listen to some of the game on the radio until the game got out of hand.
Drew, you're one of our regular callers, and I think that's awesome, but I have to be honest with you. Unless you saw the game play-by-play, and you can't even have seen it on television, you had to be at the stadium.
I saw the highlights.
Doesn't matter. Drew.
Call it what you want, Paul.
Drew.
Paul, bottom line is the guy's getting suspended. So
Drew.
Can we just press on with that? We're going to agree to disagree on
that. That's fine. I will only say this. Anybody else who wants to comment about that situation, if you were not in the building and did not see the whole field and everything that happened on every play, I don't think you have a complete picture. I just want to leave that with you. And we can agree to disagree on any opinion we have.
But
that's it.
Disagree on that because I guarantee you tomorrow. So you cut me off?
No, we didn't cut you off at all.
Drew,
didn't cut you off.
Drew, we're still here.
I didn't hear.
You're a good call. I'm not going to cut you off. I'm just letting you know. I wish you had a seat in the stadium yesterday because if you had seen everything that happened all over the field on every play, you might have a different perspective than someone who either watched it on TV or just saw the clips.
Right.
That's all
Can
I'm going to say.
Can I finish my points now?
Go right ahead.
Okay, right. I'm looking at the highlights of the game, okay? And I don't care what you want to tell me or how you want to frame it, okay? There is no way for that Odell Beckham should have went out there and speared that kid. That's intentional spearing. And, yeah, they're right. If this was a college game, he would have been ejected. So, you know, just based on that right there, man, Odell's gone. I'm not sitting up here crying for this guy to be suspended, but he needs to be taught a lesson. And we cannot afford to lose Odell Beckham. And unfortunately, really, I don't even think you guys can argue that. There's no way I don't see a suspension coming down for Odell Beckham.
Well, we'll see. I mean, Drew, I'm not saying you're wrong, and I'm not saying that Paul's wrong. Right now, it's in the league's hands. And, you know, until we get some type of a decision or whatever it may be, it's hard to say that everybody's wrong in terms of where they're coming from. Various opinions have been out there. I mean, I've seen them. I've read stories. I've heard people talk about it. But, I mean, like I said, it's just a matter of opinion at this point. I mean, nobody's right or wrong when it comes to this.
All right, then my other thing, man, like I said, the other caller took my thing. But, yeah, you know, at one point in time, I had to tell you earlier, you know, I kind of felt like the team quit. Yeah, they made a valiant comeback, man. But, you know, again, it's all been said, man. This defense just lacks talent all the way around. And, we just don't have the talent. We're too slow. We don't make plays. And you've seen it time and time again. The opposing team drives down the field at will to get whatever they need, whether it's a touchdown or a field goal. It's just horrendous. And my last thing I want to say, man, is Rashad Jennings, man, he fumbles too much for me.
Well, he had the fumble yesterday, which was overturned based on replay. I remember I think he had a fumble against the Cardinals early last season, if I recall.
Against Dallas, he had a costly one, too.
He has had a few fumbles. But, you know, let's face it, Drew, at this point, I mean, it's fair to say the running game as a whole, whether you want to pick one running back over another, it's not where the Giants want it to be. The numbers right now have been good. But, you know, as Paul and I mentioned, if this consistency was being showcased in the early stages of the season, you know, perhaps you turn some of these losses into a win because you're able to get that offense going, milk the clock, and not even allow your defense to be on the field.
I want to be accurate here just because I think it's important, okay? He's got four fumbles in his career as a running back in terms of running the ball, two fumbles in terms of catching. So that's for his entire career. He's got six total fumbles, and he's been in the league since 2009. So, to be honest with you, while there have been some costly ones, and you're right, since he's been with the Giants, they've got him for three fumbles.
So he's got half of his fumbles with the Giants.
I agree with you. They've been costly ones, and they hurt.
Exactly. They've been costly.
But to say that he's got a fumble problem, You know, heck, Tiki Barber averaged 9 a year for about 4 years there before Tom Coughlin got here.
I understand.
So we got to be accurate.
Ball. And you know what? You know, I'm not. Let me say this. Okay?
You got to appreciate me for that. I want to be accurate.
Paul, I can't. Your phone. The phones are breaking up. So
okay.
Well, we hear you, Drew.
Go ahead.
One quick comment. What else you got?
Let me just make this last point real quick. Okay, I'm not saying that. You know, Shad has a fumbling problem per se, but he just, you know, every time he touches the ball, you just kind of pray that he doesn't fumble because, yes, you're right, he just tends to fumble in the most critical of situations. But then again, it's just this whole Giants season, you know, we just the team has just not made plays, and this is where we are. And I tell you right now, if we lose Beckham, and I'm sure we are, we're not making the playoffs. I don't think we're going to catch Washington. That's just my honest opinion. I am a fan. I do believe in my team, but I at this point in time, it's an impossibility. Well, I mean, it's not impossible.
All right, Drew.
Well, they need help, and appreciate the phone call, Drew. Thanks so much for waiting.
Just doing rough calculations. Jennings for his career is averaging one fumble per every 142 touches.
That's not terrible.
A huge problem.
Yes. No, I would agree.
But he has fumbled in critical spots, and other teams have taken advantage of the fumbles he's had with the Giants.
Now, in fairness, to just put this conversation in perspective, the one thing you can, though, say is clearly the workload he's gotten with the Giants, Paul, much more than what he got with Jacksonville, because he wasn't always in every
Well, that's why I just did average per touch.
In terms of all the carries over the course of his career.
I mean, again, yeah. I'm not kidding you, folks. In the 3 or 4 years, but I think it's 4 years, before Coughlin got here, Tiki Barber averaged 9 fumbles a season. And I was a huge, huge proponent of Tiki getting the ball because he was explosive and he was a huge part of the Giants' offense, both running and passing. I mean, receiving. He was such a huge part. You had to keep feeding him the ball. But you want to talk about watching him and saying, oh, my goodness, when's it going to go on the ground? How could you not help but feel that way when Tiki was playing under Jim Fassel? 9 fumbles a year. Holy smokes.
Well, and he's arguably the most productive runner on this team over the last 2 games. Rashad Jennings, I'm talking about, too.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, but, you know.
Not Tiki Barber. I'm getting back to more
of
the Jennings
conversation. But just to quantify his feelings, the feeling that he expressed initially in his phone call about Jennings' fumble problems, that's more of a feeling you should have had when Tiki was playing under Fassel, not with Rashad Jennings.
And if you talk about key situations, listen, the fumble was costly because the Panthers then turned that into a touchdown.
No question.
Carolina's been doing that all season long, by the way, Paul. You know, 30-some-odd
no
takeaways
doubt about
for over 100 points. So that's nothing new.
And the fumbles in crunch time against Dallas and against Arizona last year, again, horribly costly. They were the most painful of turnovers. But that doesn't mean that Rashad Jennings has a fumble problem. That's all.
That's fair. That's a fair way to sum it up. Let's head back to the phone lines. Brendan is in New Jersey. Brendan, what's happening?
Hey, what's going on, guys?
How we doing, Brendan? Hi. What do you got for us?
Good. Look, I hate to sound like a broken record. I just want to, talk about the whole Norman and Odell thing. I was there. I was at the game with my dad, my uncle, and my two cousins. And, you know, from the first snap, they were going at it, both of them, and I think to put the blame on one of the guys to make Odell, I guess, the victim, it's kind of unfair. They're kind of like – they're both at blame, and it's kind of like when, you know, two younger kids, you know, go at it and one of them says, well, he started it. You know, well, they both did it. I think they're both at fault for what they did, and I think it was just kind of immature on both of their parts. But I just wanted to get that off my chest and, you know –
very reasonable comment, I might add.
Yeah, that, and I just wanted to share just a quick story about my whole experience there. At the end of the game, my uncle, he's got a bad knee. He can't walk upstairs. We're going to take the elevator down, and there's a couple people there, and they can't get the thing to open. So I try it, and the lights go on, and it opens up, and Carl Banks is standing in there, and I kind of just froze up, you know. I'm a young guy. I'm only 20. Not many people or Giants fans my age, per se, really know who he is. So that was just a cool experience to see Carl. I didn't say anything. I kind of froze up. I just looked at my dad, and he was like, that's Carl Banks, man.
Don't worry. That happens to me time and time again when I sit next to him as well, Brendan. So you're not alone.
Yeah, you know, my dad, he
doesn't bite, you know.
No, he doesn't, yes.
And my dad knows who he is. He was on his honeymoon in the Super Bowl of 86, and I think he was in, like, the Bahamas or Bermuda or some crazy place, and they did not have the game, and he was running all around town to find the Super Bowl game. They didn't know they were going to be on the Super Bowl at the time, and he finally found it in, like, a small bar somewhere, and, like, nobody even spoke English, and he was just losing his mind in the bar. So that's just the story I wanted to share about, you know.
Good stuff.
Well, yeah, good stuff. And so glad that you enjoyed your experience at the game, Brendan. Thanks so much for weighing in here at 201-939-4513. Let's head back to the lines. Let's hear from Will in Atlanta. Will, what's happening?
Oh, Lance, gentlemen, how y'all doing?
Hi. Doing well, Will. What do you got for us?
All right, well, a couple of comments, man, before I even get to my question. You know, I do have to weigh in on the Odell Beckham situation. And, you know, I'm not saying that I do completely agree with it, but I did watch the whole game on TV, and I did see a lot of the back and forth. And Beckham, he's been a target now, man, at this league for quite a while. You know what I'm saying? So, I mean, and to be honest with you, you know, who have we seen on offense besides this year of a Flowers that really has that fight since Ahmad Bradshaw and Brandon Jacobs left the team? You know what I'm saying? So, but you know, second to that, the interception in the end zone, I think Eli, he put that ball right where it needed to be. You know, if Hakeem Nicks, if he didn't fall down, I don't even think the defender, he could have even made a play on the ball.
He had no chance. Tillman had no chance. That's a touchdown. There's no question in my mind about it.
Absolutely. Absolutely, Paul. All day long. You know, and Eli, he's been stellar this season. But my question for you guys is this. On that Rashard Jennings fumble, now the ball comes out, but the whistle was blown. I haven't heard no one mention it.
Well, I was in the press box at that time, so I'll be honest with you. Until someone had messaged me earlier today, I had not questioned that either because I was not on the field and I was not watching the TV replay with the sound up. I was in the press box at that time. It's an interesting perspective that you're bringing to me. Again, I did get a message about it this morning. I don't know. I don't know.
Well, to me, I mean, the whistle blew in the process, though, of the Panthers going after the football. I don't know the exact chronological order. Did Carolina physically pick up the football, Will, you know, as the whistle blew?
Right.
But I did hear the whistles. I was aware of that. Somebody brought that up to me on Twitter. I felt, though, it was simultaneous, and that's why upon review they were able to award the Panthers the fumble recovery because obviously the play continued to evolve after Jennings lost the fumble.
I'd like to believe and understand this now with the rule they put in place last year. They're reviewing the video in New York as well as at the stadium, and they are consulting each other. I'd like to believe that audio was involved and that they did decide the right thing based on how the events occurred. I want to believe that. So I'm going to take your word for it that maybe it was close or maybe it was debatable, but you know, I'd like to think that they got it right.
Paul, let me tell you something, man. I watched that play about 10 times, literally. You know, I went out to watch the game at a friend's house, and I got home. Because I record all the Giants games. And my wife, she's a Cowboy fan. I hate to say that on air, but she's a Cowboy fan. And I made her watch it at 11, 12 o'clock at night when I got home several times over.
Oh, boy. She must be a real peach to live with these days.
Let me tell you, man, the way that it happened. Now, yes, it was a fumble. Technically, it was a fumble. The ball comes out. Now, no Carolina had even touched the ball.
Right.
The whistle is blown. Then they recover it. Then I think it was Justin Pugh. He tackles the
correct down the field.
The
I did see that.
Then there's a flag that's thrown on the play.
Yes.
I'm sorry. Yeah. Then it's a flag thrown on the play. Now, there were several whistles that was blown once the ball was recovered, but the initial – please go back and look at it. But when the initial whistle was blown,
I will.
No one had recovered the football yet.
I will go back and take a look, and then I'll consult with a gentleman who I know understands the rules very well, and I'll find out if they think that it was officiated correctly. Without having the specifics in front of me and having seen it myself, I don't really want to comment any further.
Gotcha. And definitely, Paul, and I'll be looking forward to hearing from you, man. I listen to you guys. I don't call in that much, but I've been listening to you guys for, like, the past 3 years, and I don't miss a podcast or a broadcast.
Good stuff, man.
But I'll definitely be looking forward.
Thanks
for
sticking with us.
Appreciate that, Will. Thanks so much for weighing in. All right, let's continue to move along here on the phone lines. Alan is in Miami. Alan, what's happening?
Hey, gentlemen, how are you?
Hi.
Doing well, Alan.
I'm getting a little annoyed with this whole Beckham thing. Yeah, it was a little immature, but, I mean, his behavior really didn't cost him the game. I know you had the penalties here and there, but can our defense make a stop? And then I decided, hey, let's look up some stats. We've had 19 sacks all season. That's terrible. We give up 423 yards a game on defense. We're third in the league in defensive penalties with 115 penalties. And we're first in the league in 46% on third down. This is a bad team. And I know we had the games against Dallas and Atlanta where you're trying to win a game at the end of the ball game, but every week it's the same thing. Oh, if we would have caught this ball, if we would have caught this pick six, if we didn't have this holding penalty, if we did, this is what bad teams do. Bad teams make these mistakes week in and week out, and we seem to always do this week in, week out. At the end of the day, Odell is not the reason why we lost the game. I know it's a big thing, and everybody wants to talk about it on SportsCenter and show it over and over, but that's not the reason why we lost this
game. Alan, you know, here's what I want to say to you, and you're on the right track with your comment, because really good teams are able to withstand either bad officiating or mistakes and flubs and self-inflicted wounds. Good teams can sustain those things and still win the game in spite of those things. Mediocre teams or bad teams can't. It's just that simple. Because they're not good enough to overcome either self-inflicted wounds, bad luck, bad breaks, questionable calls, whatever the case may be. Teams that are not good enough to overcome those things will suffer the consequences. So
this is a scenario.
I'm with you with your logic. What you're saying holds a lot of water for me.
Yeah, it's like everybody just wants to call in and say, well, this is stupid. The coach should have benched him. He says, hey, we're trying to win a ball game. He's our best player. He's one of the best players in the league. And you just try to win a ball game with him. But at the end of the day, he can't do everything. You know, yeah, Knicks fell down in the end zone, makes a you know, bad play and caused this interception. Jennings fumbling in a really, really, really tough spot. But, you know, like the New England game, like the Carolina game, like the Jets game, you can't be giving up third and longs. You can't.
You're 100% right.
You got to make stops.
And one last point I'll make is you got to get a linebacker the first round. You know, the fact that Landon Collins is leading this team in tackles is a bad thing. Safety should, in my opinion, a safety should never lead your team in tackles, because that means your running back is getting into the second level. That's got to stop at the front. That's got to stop with the linebackers. And if you look at the good teams, you look at Luke Kuechly, you look at the linebackers that San Francisco had for all those years, you look at some of the boys in Seattle and in Justin Houston and Kansas City, those good teams, you have your linebackers that stop it. I mean, you saw on the 3rd and 7, Unga just looked completely lost, just going straight beeline and tackle Cam. Then Cam just, instead of getting an 8-yard run, turns into 25. Why can't we stop anybody? The defense gets paid to, and at the end of the day, your defense is supposed to win a game for you.
Alan, in fairness, and you do bring up an interesting point that a safety is leading the team in tackles, but in fairness, you know, very few linebackers have played all 14 games this season, whereas Landon Collins has been out there. So that's also a reflection as to why he's the leading tackler. I mean, Devon Kennard, he missed his 5th game yesterday. Unga's been in and out of the lineup. Brinkley hasn't played the full season. So, I mean, you got to take that into consideration, why at least Landon Collins leads the team in tackles.
Yeah, I'll give you that. But again, there's just there needs to be a better pass rush, more tacklers on defense. It's the defense. To me, it's the defense is the problem.
Well, and that's why, and I don't mean to interrupt, Alan, but that's why Tom Coughlin has had such an aggressive approach on offense all season. And we've been talking about this on shows, and callers call up and, you know, why did they decide to do this? Coughlin, that's why he's been aggressive all season, because he wants the points, he wants the insurance and the protection. So I think yesterday's game was another example as to why Tom Coughlin has made those types of decisions throughout the season.
I would add this to you. It's Alan, right?
Yes.
Alan, I just want to mention to you, the 2007 team that won the Super Bowl, did you like that team? Did you think it was a really good team?
You had players. You had leadership on
the team. Did you know, and I'm just going to debunk, I'm going to debunk your theory, because Jabril Wilson was a safety, and he led that team in tackles. It wasn't Michael Strahan. Pierce. It wasn't Osiyo Manura. Jabril Wilson, the free safety, led that team in tackles. I understand your point. A lot of times on bad teams, the safety, who's on the third line of defense, does lead the team in tackles. That can be said by a beginner who doesn't understand a lot about the game, because a lot of times that does equate. But there are many of high-quality teams, championship teams, where the safety has, in fact, led the team in tackles. It does happen.
It does happen. That team had 52 sacks. OC had 13 sacks.
Absolutely, but your comment was the safety leads the team in tackles. That's a sign of a bad team. Not always. Not always.
As long as you're getting sacks and pressure, then that's fine.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Which is why I tell people all the time, football is a complex game. It's like a set of dominoes. It's like a spider web. Everything weaves into each other. You can't just make one statement or isolate one thing and say, this is good, this is bad, and that's why the team is. It doesn't work that way. You understand what I'm saying.
Of course. That's why.
All right, so we're cool.
we'll quote John Mara to end our conversation. The web is broken. This spider web, our web is broken, and we gotta fix it.
They got to get better. You're right.
All right, Alan. Appreciate the phone call. Thanks so much for weighing in. We want to remind fans, Big Blue Kickoff Live brought to you by DraftKings. Now, if you've never played on DraftKings, it's changing the way we play fantasy football. Just pick your contest, pick your players, and if you win, pick up your cash. Simple as that. Go to DraftKings.com, enter promo code CONTACT to claim your free entry today. DraftKings Fantasy Sports, free to play. Let's head back to the phone lines. We've got Len in Maryland. Len, what's happening?
Hey, guys. How you doing?
What's up, Len?
Good. Hey, Paul, good point about being there and being able to see the whole field and what was happening rather than being confined to the image on the screen. I think it does make a difference.
It does.
If you saw the game from that perspective. But look, the league is going to do what it wants to do, and most likely my feeling about league actions these days is it'll have nothing to do with reality. It'll have to do with how they can cover their butt with so much controversy about what happened between these two guys. So if Odell gets, sat down by the league for a game, which Schefter thinks that's what's going to happen, he appeals and then probably pays some big fine and plays Sunday night against Minnesota. And, frustrating loss in a year of frustrating losses. But, hey, we're still in it. We're still in it. We got a shot. You know, nothing to be gained from looking back at this game. Nothing to be gained. I mean, what do we learn? I mean, we drafted these guys. We saw them in training camp, OTAs, four preseason games, 14 regular season games. We know the strengths and weaknesses of individual players. We know the strengths and weaknesses of their units, of different sides of the ball. I mean, it's nothing to be learned. Burn the tape. Get ready for Minnesota. Hopefully it'll mean something. Vereen's touchdown yesterday, nice play.
Yeah.
It came on a third down play.
Yep.
You know, I was thinking during the game, that early in the second quarter, Shane was in on third down. And, you know, they went to him on third down, and he came up short. Boy, that first down right before the end of the first half. Holy cow. They convert that first down there. And we keep the ball, and Carolina doesn't score the second touchdown. You know where I'm going with that.
Yeah, but I know.
I'd like to see Vereen on the field on second down. You know, I'd love to know. We're not going to be able to recoup these stats, but he had 8 catches yesterday. Hey, how many of them came on third down? How many came on first? How many came, Paul, on my favorite down? You know this. I love second down.
Yeah, I know.
I think second down is a damage down. I think you can do damage on second down. You know, I think it's kind of predictable with Shane on the field on third down that they get their guys on the field. Let's run those plays on second down. I think we can really do business. Listen, he had 12 catches in the Super Bowl. I'd love to know how many of those catches came on first down, second down, and third down.
I'd have to go through all of these plays to count them up, but I really don't want to do that.
I keep getting this feeling. I'd love to see them. I don't want to even say mix it up. I would just love to see Vereen on the field on second down. I before the other team can get that third down defense in there, get that fifth defensive back in the game, and just see what they can do there. I think we had 15 possessions yesterday. 15 possessions. Of course, the 15, we had one right at the end of the first half. It was 8 seconds.
Yeah, you never count kneel downs. When you do those kinds of things, never count the kneel downs.
Yeah, I know. Well, there you go. We had 14 possessions. Carolina had 15 possessions. Carolina punted seven times. I said on Friday, if the only way we'd really be in trouble is if Carolina punted less than five times. Carolina punted seven times yesterday. Oh, jeez, I would have thought that was going to be a telling point. All right, look, Bridgewater, good quarterback. You've got to get ready. Get the healthy people out on the field. Let's keep fighting. We're still in it. We got a shot. Let's see where we are on. Let's see where we are on Sunday night. Hey, thanks for taking the call. I know everybody's frustrated. You know, me too. Terrible ride home yesterday. And I don't know what to say.
Well, Len, I want to leave you with this.
It just seems like it's this kind of year. DeMontre gets cut. 2 days later, what happens? Two defensive linemen get hurt. We cut Merriweather in the middle of the week. What happens yesterday? We're down to minimums. We're down to three safeties. What happens? A safety gets hurt in the game. I mean, it just seems like I'm not blaming the injuries. I'm just saying it just seems like this is just tilting the wrong way. Just tilting the wrong way.
Well, you would assume based on the law of average that sometimes these things would balance out. Unfortunately, in the case of the Giants this year, the things have not balanced out. But Len, I do want to piggyback off of your point about third downs, because I have the third down numbers from yesterday. I don't have how many times Vereen was targeted.
I'm going to help you out here. On the season, 16 catches on third down of his 51 receptions so far this year.
Okay.
So that's how much he's involved. But the point I was going to say with respect to yesterday's game, since they ran the ball effectively on first and second down, the third downs are very manageable yesterday.
Yes, they were.
Compared to what we've seen in previous games, they had 9 downs for 5 yards or less on third down yesterday. That was a season best. They only had 3 for 10 yards or more. And based on the averages this year, that's impressive. Why? Because they ran the ball effectively on first and second down. So you don't have to worry about when you're using Vereen as long as you run the ball effectively on first and second down, because then you're going to have manageable downs.
That's really an excellent point. I hadn't really thought about. Hey, one other stat. You know, if you look at the total catches by tight ends, I think we're up to about 70 catches. Maybe not quite. Maybe just under 70. 14 games, 70 catches out of the tight end position. That's not bad.
Well, let's see. In terms of the breakdown, I don't know. Do you have the numbers? I was just about to bring it up.
I didn't have it. But what I was going to say is, for me, it's when are they and do they convert first downs, not the number of catches, to be honest with you.
Okay.
That's not as an important stat for me. But okay. I hear what you're saying, that they've gotten productivity out of the position.
Yeah, they have. They've got. I mean, you know, it's not one guy. But, I think it's almost, if you look it up, it's almost
Well, 70. It's not that high as you think. Wiltie's got 34. Larry Donnell's got 29. Then Cunningham's got 6. And Daniel Fells had 6. Yeah. So, I mean, it's almost
70.
It's in that ballpark. Yeah.
Yeah, it's almost 70. It's right in that ballpark.
Just about.
I out of that position. But you got to get first downs. And how many – I'll look this up. You don't have to. I was going to say how many touchdowns do we have out of the tight ends. Don't worry about that one. But it was good to see throwing to the running backs. I think the running backs had 9 receptions yesterday. And, Paul, you know, way back in July, I was telling you I thought the running backs would get to 100 catches. It's probably going to be a little short.
I thought Vereen was going to have between 60 and 70.
Well, there's been games, especially early in the season, where it looked like he was going to be on pace for that, but it hasn't been as consistent.
He's got 51.
Appreciate the phone call. Thanks so much for weighing in. The tight ends have 4 total touchdowns on the season. Donnell's got 2. Wiltie's got 2. They have both come in the last 2 games combined. Another topic that came up about that fumble with Rashad Jennings, I got clarification, so I want to at least set the record straight in terms of the rule book. In 2006, the committee on rules made a change in that when a team fumbles a ball, even though the whistle is blown and it seems as if the play is ruled dead,
there can be a change of possession.
You can still recover the fumble after the whistle is blown. That was a change that was made in 2006. So therefore, regardless of whether you go back and look at the replay, and I don't remember the exact chronological order, but even if you heard the whistle, Carolina still had an opportunity to recover the football, and they could review that based on replay and change the initial
rule. Was his question, did the whistle blow before the ball came out or before the knee was down?
Well, I don't remember if that was the exact question.
I don't know.
From what I recall, the whistle was blown after, I believe, he fumbled the football.
And before the knee was down.
No. Meaning the ball came out. The fumble was legitimate on replay.
Well, then in that case, it would have been ruled correctly.
But you could make the argument perhaps the whistle blew before Carolina fully got recovery.
I'd like to see the play, but
well, I'd have to look. But all I'm saying is there was a rule change in 2006 of change of possession. Whistle blows, fumble occurred. Opposing team has an opportunity.
They cannot advance it, but they can get the ball.
Correct. And the reason why they made the rule change is because they didn't want to put officials in precarious situations where fumbles were occurring. Teams were recovering those fumbles, but because of the logistics of the rule, they couldn't change possession because, oh, you blew the whistle.
Right.
It's dead. Now we can't have a change of possession. So they wanted to give a little bit of a window to allow replay to prove the officials wrong or right.
Yeah.
That's why they made that change. So regardless of whether the whistle was blown based on a 2006 rule, Carolina had an opportunity to recover the football even after the whistle was blown. I hope that at least clarifies, and I think it was Will who called up and asked that specific question. So hopefully that at least tackles that. In the meantime, let's head back to the lines. We got a few more people we want to try to squeeze them in. Raldi wants to weigh in. Raldi, what's happening?
Good morning, fellas. How you doing?
Hi.
Doing well, Raldi.
Hey, another tough loss. I mean, Paul, I don't normally agree with you, but I agree with you 100% this afternoon. I mean, unless you're on the field to really see what was going on, you can't even judge it. I mean, you got a person calling up talking about he was listening to the game on the radio and he wanted to say this about Beckham, this and that. I mean, it was both sides of the field. I mean, Norman was not the same. Norman was going, he grabbed Beckham, body slammed him. What do you expect the man to do? You know, I know the league is going to say, all right, they're going to probably give him a suspension. But if Odell Beckham get a suspension, Norman should get a suspension because he needed him in the head, too, when he was on the ground.
Yeah, I appreciate your comments on the phone call. May I suggest to all of those folks who did not attend the game, if you have NFL Game Pass, which gives you the overhead view of the entire field, and you can see every play on every play with one of the angles that's on NFL Game Pass. It's through NFL.com. You get a subscription to it. You can have access to that stuff. And that would really give you a much better perspective, not only on what happened yesterday, but on the whole field and how schemes work. So I appreciate you raising that issue. Please go ahead. Oh, is he gone?
Oh, we lost Roldy?
Oh, right. I didn't want to lose him.
No problem.
All right.
All right, let's move along here. Let's hear from Marco in Connecticut. Marco, what's happening?
Hey, guys. How are you today?
Doing well, Marco. What do you got for us?
I'm a little under the weather, but it meant a lot to me today to call in. And I really don't have a voice, but I'm just going to do the best I can.
All right, we hear you loud and clear, Marco. So what do you got?
Okay. Well, after yesterday, it's like a season of disbelief. You know, every game. I just don't know what we're going to get from this team. I'm really frustrated. And I think this is a team which is crazy enough to think that, you know, when the season's over, whoever's playing in the Super Bowl, the Giants realistically could have played with any team there. It's just crazy the amount of games that are going down to the wire. And the football gods are not on our side right now. And, you know, it's just the way it is. A couple comments, guys. I wanted to ask you, though, before I get into it. During the game yesterday, Ted Ginn Jr., around the beginning of the fourth quarter, was declared out with a rib injury. How can he be declared out and then allowed to come back in? Can you explain that?
There was a I may be speaking out of turn because I can only speak from what happened in the press box. I do know that the public relations, media relations staff of the Panthers, they had gotten word from the sideline that they believed he was out, and they passed that along to the PA in the press box, which then goes to the radio and the TV crews. Then we relay that to the fans. I do know that at some point very shortly after that, Ginn had gone back out onto the field, and the public relations, media relations man from the Panthers had come over to the Giants rep to the PA system there in the box and said, Ginn is coming back into the game. So I don't know if there was a miscommunication originally from their side of it or things just changed and they literally got word from the sideline that, oh, wait a minute, he is coming back in. But I do know the Panthers rep did come down to the Giants press box area to indicate that Ginn was coming back in. So what you're hearing on television is simply a line of communication.
I'm curious about the rule. That was it.
I don't know if there's actually a rule for that.
I don't know. I was just going to weigh in on that. I was going to ask you, Paul, because I don't remember hearing a rule, Marco, that even if, let's say, hypothetically, a player is ruled out, that he can't re-enter the game.
Yeah, I don't know that there's a rule for that. But in terms of the confusion, I'm just letting you know it's not like somebody was lying to you. It just, in the way that things happened and the events happened, that's how they occurred. But again, the Panthers did try to get word to the press people that Ginn was, in fact, coming back into the game. It may have not been communicated on TV that quickly.
So
though.
That would explain the confusion part. And okay. Football's not like baseball where you take a pitcher out
and
you can't bring him back
oh,
in.
Oh, pinch hitter, yeah. Nah, he's out.
I mean, in the NFL, Marco, we've seen quarterbacks, they go out, they're out for a few plays, and then they re-enter the game. So I don't think there's a rule that exists that says if a player is ruled out by a PR group that all of a sudden he can't come back in maybe 5 minutes later.
Okay. All right. Well, just moving on then. Thanks for clarifying, guys.
Sure. Sure.
Listen, there's a lot of issues here that are going to be addressed as the months unfold into the off season and stuff. I don't know where you start with the defense, and where you know what do you how do you go out and do this? I think if you want to point it on a lack of leadership, and I don't necessarily think hey we needed a guy to go over to Beckham yesterday. Tell him to cut it out. Tell him to get his head back into the game. Sure. And I know there were guys doing that. Defensively, specifically, I think Antoine Roll is a huge loss on this team, and I said it in the offseason. His play was going down, and there needed to be an upgrade at the position, but you cannot put a value on what kind of leader that guy was. And in a game like that, in the situations that this team has been through, New England, the Jets coming down the field, Dallas, New Orleans, and now yesterday, that's the type of guy that this team needs. And it frustrates me when people now are taking shots at our coach who is a leader, and he is a guy that, and I get pretty heated about this. There is no better guy for that job. And that's what everyone wants to say. Well, Beckham's acting like an idiot on the field. Why doesn't Coach Coughlin go over to him and grab him? Well, how does anybody know what's said and what's not said? It's what the cameras are picking up. All right, this guy hasn't lost the grip of the team, and I think that needs to be said.
I think you've got some very.
To be honest with you, I'd like it. I wanted the receiver to cut it out, and I would have liked it if Coughlin either took him out for a series or if they threw him out of the game, because now it's going to come back to hurt us next week if he's not able to play.
I think you've put forth some very logical and well thought out comments. I like your line of thinking very much. I would say this though, and this is hindsight because you know during the course of the off season, I was in favor of bringing Antoine Roll back. If you've listened to this show, however, I will also say he's been limited to 7 games this year by injury. So to be hypothetical about it, there's no way to know if he would have been on the field for yesterday's game because he has been banged up in Chicago and has been unavailable for half the season.
Yeah, he was just put on IR recently. Yeah,
fair enough, guys. And my last point is this. Beckham, you're gonna grow from this. You're a young guy. You got a lot of attention. There was a magnifying glass on you regardless of what happened yesterday. But here's the problem. What you did yesterday now is on tape. And teams that were in the NFC East or around the league that were racking their brains trying to figure out how to stop you. Well, there's one thing that you put on tape now. You told them that they could get in your head.
Oh, I'm glad you brought this up.
And you're right, Paul. You're right. There's a lot of stuff that people didn't see what was going on the other end. But he has to have more composure to know that we need to win that game to get into the playoffs, and we can't have our best player check out for 3 quarters.
Okay, here's what I want to say to you, though, and I appreciate the call, and I want you to hang on to the computer to listen to my answer. Here's what I want to say. I discussed this with Jeff Fegels after the game in the coaches' club during the Q&A session with the fans. Here's the interesting part. There have been players over the years who have had their minds taken out of a game because of mental gamesmanship by an opponent. However, usually that loses them for the game. That's not what happened with Odell Beckham. And here's why I want to say this. Held without a catch in the first half, when most of the shenanigans happened, then into the third quarter. But in the second half, Odell Beckham had all 6 of his catches for 76 yards. And oh, by the way, he caught the game-tying touchdown pass with under 2 minutes to go. So that says to me, no, despite all the stuff that went on and all the extracurricular garbage, Odell Beckham was able to refocus, did learn that all of this other scrappy stuff wasn't helping the team. He had to buckle down and make plays. He made plays at the end of this game. He got the Giants even at 35-35. I look at that part of this as a very big positive, because I've seen guys, T.O. and some of the other flamboyant receivers over the years, get taken out of a game and they don't respond for the entire Sunday. They're gone for that game. Odell Beckham rebounded in the fourth quarter and caught the tying touchdown pass.
Well, it was a tale of two halves for him, certainly. I think that's evidence, but I do think Marco does bring up a good point, Paul, that it is a copycat league. And in a copycat league, teams look at what the previous opponent did. And while he did bounce back and recovered, no guarantee that every game is going to play out that way, where you're going to overcome a 28-point
You'd like
deficit.
To believe he will learn and not
Correct.
Let that happen
Absolutely.
Again.
Absolutely. That he will learn, and that also the officials will be on top of things if it gets to
no
that
question.
Extent. I think everybody can treat it as a learning experience. The opposition, the Giants, Beckham himself, the officials.
Yep.
And that's why it's documented on tape right now. Let's try to squeeze in one more caller here. Rolando is on the line. Rolando, what's happening?
How you doing, Lance? How you doing, Paul?
Hi. Hello, Rolando. What do you got for us?
Well, I hear what you're saying, Lance, but this is not just the first time they've been playing physical with Beckham. They did the same thing when we were playing New England. It was a physical game. And I agree with Paulie. Watch the whole entirety of the game. Make your comments after you see the film, and make sure that it's not just one-sided. Because when you listen to the game and you hear Troy Aikman, man, this guy, he kills us, bro. He kills us. He crucified the Giants all the time. He never mentioned what that Bryant did to Revis when he threw a punch at him, and they were going physical. There's changes to be made. The only thing I didn't like is when the kid came with his head, with his helmet, and hit the kid in the face. That's the only thing. I like the coaching staff. I wish these people really realize that we're undermanned defensively. We're only playing based on the strength of our team. And the strength of our team is a passing game. We have to take chances towards the end because we can't generate a running game. So we can't run the clock.
It's a flawed team. It's a flawed team, and they're doing the best they can with what they got.
Bro, we went parallel. This year, I thought we were gonna climb with the free agents and stuff. We went parallel based on the injuries that we occur. This year, I could see us going – we got to go heavy D, okay? We got to go heavy D. Three personnel changes on offense, about maybe 5 to 6 defensively, not including the draft, okay? And when they're talking middle linebacker – check out Alabama, Reggie Ragland. When you're talking defensive linemen, you have plenty. And then
he's already getting a head start. I said, Rolando, you're not messing around. You already got the draft.
And he mentioned Alabama. Howard Cross is now very, very happy.
You tease me all the time, Lance and Paulie. I do my draft.
I'm not blaming you for that. I'm just saying. I mean, we're still in regular season mode.
I think that's great. I'm still in the sand of this season, but I will get caught up. I promise you.
You know what happens to me, Paulie and Lance? As the season progresses, I start seeing the flaws.
Yeah, I got you.
And I start adding. I could use this guy, Emmanuel Okwara.
I hear you
from Oklahoma State. Watch that dude. His first step is unbelievable.
You got it.
The kid Shank Lawson. Again, look, I know you're
Thank you.
Listen, I haven't been able to speak to you guys since the
I know, but we're overtime here. We're getting the sign that we got to run.
Up against the clock.
I will only say this.
But
remember, when
call.
You do your draft stuff, veteran free agency plays into that too. So you don't want to just put all your eggs in the draft basket, because you got to figure out who you're going to be able to buy in free agency. So you may be drafted or looking at linebackers in the draft.
And it may
maybe
be
they're going to buy
in
him
free
agency.
Correct.
You never know.
That comes first, then comes the draft.
Great call, though.
Absolutely. And certainly appreciate all the callers for weighing in. Certainly a lot to dissect from this last contest. We'll start to look ahead to the Minnesota Vikings and continue to review this last contest tomorrow on Big Blue Kickoff Live that comes your way at noon Eastern. For Paul Dottino, I'm Lance Meadow. Enjoy the rest of your Monday. We'll speak to you again tomorrow. Have a good one.
All right, here we go, here we go. Here we go. Come on, man. We need the work. Let's go, let's go.
He's got through. 35, 30.